I love livers. My introduction to liver was perfectly pleasant. There was a period in my childhood when liver was a routine dinner entree. This was when my mother had 6 children under the age of 10 and was assisted by a mother's helper. My memory is a bit hazy on this point, but I don't think we children ever had meals with our parents. My father was a printing salesman and routinely got home around 7 p.m., and I think my mother made a separate meal for the two of them, while a rotating crew of mother's helpers was assigned to children's dinner. There were a lot of them. There was the mother's helper my mother fired because she seemed too weirdly religious. She had taped a sign, "Have you prayed about it lately?" in the bathroom just opposite the toilet. Then there was the tiny, scrappy woman named Ada, whose false teeth were fascinating, and who would go to the bars at the nearby naval base and come home drunk. She also tried to play the accordion, and at night I remembered hearing a tortured version of "Roll Out the Barrel" emanating from her bedroom. But mostly there was a series of big-boned Finnish women from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. My mother cleverly put an ad in the UP Mining Journal and then shared her responses with friends, so that our town had a nucleus of Finnish women. My mother referred to them as 300-pound wonders. They stayed with us during the school year and then disappeared to their own families during summer vacation. I think that Maddie was the 300-pound wonder who had a fondness for liver and incorporated into our limited menus. When Maddie was replaced by Eileen, liver totally disappeared from my life for a good 15 years. But during that short period, I loved our liver meals, in part because they were so visually stunning. The sliced liver was an assertive, deep, rich brown color, the kind of brown that royalty would wear, or the color of the most beautiful horse you could ever imagine. The liver certainly didn't have any unpleasant associations. It wasn't pale or timidly brown, or the color of mud or dirt. And then the liver was always served with a beautiful, rich, saffron-colored squash puree, again the color of royalty. I remember dipping the bite of liver into the squash and marveling at the exquisite color combination as the saffron draped over the deep brown. I don't think I knew exactly what liver was, and certainly didn't realize that I myself was the proud owner of a liver. My attempts to come to grips with being a carnivore just focused on muscles as meat and didn't include liver. Standard-issue hamburgers were far removed from the barnyard cows, but eating chicken could be unsettling. Chicken breasts were generically referred to as white meat, thus removing any direct anatomic association, but chicken legs were a different story. They actually looked like legs, and you can imagine them still attached to a vibrant chicken, proudly strutting around the chicken yard. And then there was the Eastern lamb, not the meat itself, but the very anatomically correct cake my grandmother served. As much as everyone liked cake, it was difficult to get enthusiastic about diving in. What were you supposed to do? Just chop off the lamb's head and let it roll around your plate? I remember an untouched Easter lamb cake languishing in my parents' freezer for many years. Then came the cadaver in my first year of medical school. With the body splayed open and each muscle carefully dissected, I had to confront the stark fact that I was a carnivore. I remember teasing out the nerve and artery that ran beneath the bottom edge of ribs, and then that night at dinner I found the exact same anatomy on my barbecued pork ribs. I know that I'll always be a carnivore, since I don't think I could ever give up my bacon, but it's easy to divorce yourself from the animal kingdom when the meat is butchered and carefully wrapped up. It's more difficult when you realize that you are personally carrying around the same cuts of meat. And then there was the liver. My cadaver liver, frankly, was a bit dinged up and shrunken with formaldehyde, but then I became better reacquainted with my favorite childhood meal when I started doing autopsies as part of my pathology residency. A fresh human liver looks exactly the same as a calf's liver in the meat department, and in that moment I realized I could never eat liver again, not even if it was the last thing on earth. The specter of cannibalism was the major issue, but as I progressed through medical school, I grew to hold this humble organ in the highest esteem and felt it would be just disrespectful to eat one. It turns out that all vertebrates have a liver, and it's the largest solid organ in the body, larger even than the brain. Its shape is determined by the constraints of anatomy. The liver of the snake, for example, is long and thin, but the human liver consists of 2 big honkin' lobes nestled under the ribs on the right. And the liver is a total workhorse. I am reminded of the character Boxer in George Orwell's allegory Animal Farm. Boxer is a loyal horse, representing the hardworking proletariat in revolutionary Russia. He takes on any job at the animal farm, and his mantra is, "I will work harder." This is the epitome of the liver. Sure, the heart is a vital organ, but it only does one thing, beat, and thank God for that. But in contrast, the functions of the liver go on forever. It sorts out the incoming nutrients sent its way by the intestines, manufactures vital proteins, manages the supply of glucose, produces bile that seeps into the intestine to aid in fat digestion, removes fatigued blood cells, and detoxifies all sorts of drugs and nastiness that we throw at it. You can douse your liver in toxins on a daily basis, and it just keeps chugging along. Another great thing about the liver is that it can regrow whole new lobes. We are amazed by the lizard who can regrow a tail, complete with muscles, nerves, and bone. But you can whack out half the liver and it will grow back and eagerly assume all its complicated responsibilities. Good as new. What a fabulous spare part factory. If you are in the unfortunate situation of having a loved one who needs a new liver, or you've just suffered a gunshot wound or some other grisly trauma, you've got enough liver to spare. The loyal liver simply absorbs all the abuse that we heap upon it. As the story of Animal Farm progresses, we see Boxer working harder and harder, but we also suspect that this unquestioning loyalty will be his doom. When things start to go badly on Animal Farm, and the head pig Napoleon starts to execute other animals, Boxer only naively says, "I would not have believed that such things could happen on our farm. It must be due to some fault in ourselves. The solution, as I see it, is to work harder." The liver just keeps absorbing the blows. For example, in one microscopic slide from an IV drug user, I remember spotting small crystals of glass embedded in the liver cells. At the beginning of Animal Farm, Old Major gives Boxer some ominous advice about this unrequited loyalty. "The very day that those great muscles of yours lose their power, Jones will send you to the knacker, who will cut your throat and boil you down for the foxhounds." And that is exactly the fate of our liver. When exhaustion sets in and the liver finally fails, all you can do is cut it out and pray that you can find a new one quickly. I've grown to respect my liver, and I'm not the only one. In his book, The Lives of a Cell, the noted essayist and physician Lewis Thomas paid the following eloquent homage. "I'd sooner be told, 40,000 feet over Denver, that the 747 jet in which I had a coach seat was now mine to operate as I pleased. At least I'd have the hope of bailing out if I could find a parachute and discover quickly how to open a door. Nothing would save me and my liver if I were in charge, for I am, to face facts squarely, considerably less intelligent than my liver. I am, moreover, constitutionally unable to make hepatic decisions, and I prefer not to be obliged to, ever. I would not be able to think of the first thing to do. I would love to actually see my liver at work, glistening a deep rich brown in the upper right quadrant, pulsating slightly with blood flow, and bobbing up and down with respiration. I remember working in the pathology lab when I got a request to photograph a surgical specimen, an old, tired, and lumpy uterus that had been removed in a hysterectomy. From time to time we would photograph specimens, but only if they posed some problem of orientation or were particularly interesting. This uterus did not qualify, so I ignored the request. And then the word came down from the OR. The surgeon insisted that I photograph this thing since it belonged to a trustee's wife. I dutifully made the vanity shot and imagined that the trustee's wife, who was evidently used to getting her way, must have had many children and had developed a sentimental attachment to her womb. In thinking of my liver, I understood. When I had my gallbladder removed, I had enough wits about me to ask the surgeon to save the stones as a memento. But now I regret that I didn't give one of the OR nurses a camera and ask her to take a picture of this magnificent and loyal organ hard at work.